Thank you, Prem. Thank you, Sai Prakash. And dear listener, Sai Ram from Prashantinilam, the most happening place on the planet. And Prashanti indeed is bubbling with energy, people, activity, music, dance, devotion, and sublimity. A sublimity that you experience when there is a powerful congregation of pious energy. What is it that makes Prashanti, Prashanti? What is it that makes a temple, a temple, a mosque, mosque, or a church, a church? It is this congregation of collective uplifting emotion. And the best emotion is devotion. What is emotion? As someone said, emotion is energy in motion. And what you feel and experience in these times of festivals and celebrations, just like Guru Purnima celebrations, which is around the corner, happening now in fact, is this palpable presence of this colossal transformative and elevating energy. Sometimes we, those of us who live in Prashanti, may not feel it much, but we live, because we live in this environment all the time. Just like the fish, it has to get out of the water to know what water means to it. But I often get an inkling of what this energy is when I speak to people, especially those who have come for the first time and those who come to this place often, who return to this place every now and then. This morning I met a young professional from Hyderabad. He was coming to Prashanti for the first time, and when I asked him what it felt like to be in Prashanti, his immediate reaction was, "I feel so peaceful here. No stress, no pain. I'm going to come back again." In fact, when Bhagwan named this place Prashantinilam way back in 1950, this is exactly what he had mentioned. This place would become that powerful space on earth where agitated and confused minds would find peace. Not just peace, but eternal peace, permanent peace. It is the place which will radiate that supreme peace. And that is why he christened it not just Shantinilayam, but Prashantinilayam. And that is why more and more people will realize as time goes by that this indeed is the spiritual capital of the universe, established by the Almighty Himself. Because everyone in this world is constantly looking for only this in their lives. Who is not looking for peace? Who is not looking for bliss in their lives? And it is these two which can be found here, which can be found at the feet of the Sadguru. This morning I was talking to a very senior gentleman from Sri Lanka. He's 80 years now, and his energy levels and his enthusiasm is someone who is 50. He is so eager to do Swami's work, even now drawing up plans every day to see how to benefit yet another child, yet another school, yet another village by taking Swami's values of love and truth to them. EHV has been his life, his breath. His name is Kulaveera Singham. He is indeed a brave warrior, just like his name suggests, a lion, Veera Singham. He is a silent spiritual crusader. And when I asked him what motivates him to give so much of himself to Swami's work, especially at his age, to answer this, he went down the memory lane and he picked up just one incident that happened more than half a century ago in the 60s. That was the time he had just heard of Bhagwan through some books and friends. And people in Trincomalee, which is in eastern Sri Lanka, where he comes from, started worshipping Swami. But he said he is not going to place Swami in the altar of his home before experiencing Swami firsthand. And so he came to Prashantinilayam during Dasara celebrations. And one of those days, when he was in Prashanti, he had the chance to sit in the front. And that day, when Bhagwan came, he stood right in front of him for almost 2 minutes and did nothing, just looked deep into his eyes. That is all Bhagwan did. And he says that look was so powerful, so intense, so transforming and so transmuting. He says he didn't know what happened to him. He was just sweating. He was crying. He's crying like he had never cried before. It was as if a dam within had burst, and within years of locked up and clogged up thoughts, feelings and memories just got washed away. They just got cleansed. He did not need another confirmation from Swami about his divinity. When the soul speaks, the mind stops reasoning. What Bhagwan did to his soul was something only a divine master could do. I remember talking to a Jewish lady, Miss Ira Strum from Israel, many years ago, and she narrated to me how she came to see Swami after 3 years of crisis, 3 years of little sleep, 3 years of breathing problems, nightmares and fear of running from one therapist to another, feeling her soul feeling trapped like in a cage within her body. It was as if her soul was screaming for help, and no one seemed to have any solution. Everything in life had lost meaning. She almost wanted to end her life, and that is when she heard the voice from within saying, "It is not you who will decide when to die. Leave it to God. You still have work to do." And it is at this time that a friend told her, "There is only one who can help you, and his name is Sai Baba. They say he is full of pure love, and pure love is what you need. This is what will help you, cure you." And that is how she came to Swami. And once she saw Swami, in those initial months of Prashanti, she was only crying from morning till night. She says, "I was crying from what I was seeing inside and what I was seeing outside. Plus there was that additional conflict of accepting someone who is in a human form as God. Her God was abstract. She was brought up in the Jewish tradition and she just could not surrender to Swami because of this." And this crying continued. The pain in the heart was unabated and she became so tired. One day she became so weak that finally she told Swami, "Okay Swami, whoever you are, I surrender. Please, please guide me back to life." And she says that is when light and love started filling her being. She says that is when she heard Swami's voice for the first time. Swami was in Kodaikanal, and in the discourse that Swami said, one line just remained in her head. Bhagwan said, "To help someone who is kind to you is easy, but to help someone who hurt you is greater." And when she heard this, she says, "This was my way. Yet for so many years I was misunderstood. People took it as a weakness and I, knowing that I couldn't behave differently, felt so alone and hurt." And then she heard a strong voice from within, "Do your work for God." And she says, "This was not new for me because I have heard this before, but somewhere along the way I had become tired. I had lost confidence in myself. I started to believe other people who seemed surer of themselves. I was listening outside, not inside." And she says, "Swami, in your own special way, you reopened my heart. You brought me back to myself. When I really needed help, you sent me help. When I wanted to lean, you pushed me back to my center. In strange and mysterious ways, you have given me powerful lessons. In strange and mysterious ways, you brought back my trust. You were my inspiration, my mirror, my guide." And at some point, she says, "Swami, you, the voice within and God, all became one. And when that happened, I felt only love. And this was a feeling, not a thought." The reason why I mention this is Miss Ira Strum from Israel is someone who probably sat in the 100th row in the darshan when Swami was moving in the crowd. She never touched Swami or talked to Swami or got anywhere close to his physical form. But just by being in his presence, she was transformed. That presence brought such fantastic change in her being. It recreated her. And this is not just the story of Ira. I'm sure you will get a similar story if you talk to anyone who is sitting in Sai Kalwant Hall, who is sitting for Bhagwan's darshan. And this happens even now, because for this the physical form of Bhagwan is not needed. You just have to be in that presence. And this presence is felt so strongly when you are in Prashanti, when you are in Sai Kalwant Hall, when you are in the vicinity of his Samadhi, or whenever, wherever you can recreate that Prashanti in your heart. Once that happens, it begins to transform you. And this, I feel, is the most beautiful aspect of the Sadguru. Someone said, God to be God should not just satisfy the intellect, it should touch the soul and transform the senses. And that is what the divine alchemist does. That is what the divine preceptor does. And this is what we are going to ruminate on, contemplate on today. And before we begin, let us pay our homage, our salutations to that Sai Sadguru.
ईश्वराम्बसुतं देवं नित्यमङ्गलकारिणं नित्यमङ्गलकारिणं वृङ्कवधूतसंप्रीतं वृङ्कवधूतसंप्रीतं वन्दे सत्यं जगद्गुरुं वन्दे तुलसीदलसङ्काशं योगिमानसपूजितं तुलसीदलसङ्काशं योगिमानसपूजितं सर्वमानवसन्देशं वन्दे वन्दे सत्यं जगद्गुरुं वन्दे हरिनीलजटाजूटं पूर्णचन्द्रनिभाननं हरिनीलजटाजूटं पूर्णचन्द्रनिभाननं भक्तलोकचिदाभासं वन्दे वन्दे सत्यं जगद्गुरुं वन्दे आर्तत्राणव्रताधारं व्योमकेशविराजितम् आर्तत्राणव्रताधारं व्योमकेशविराजितम् यशः चन्द्रप्रभास्तोमं वन्दे सत्यं वन्दे सत्यम् जगद्गुरुं वन्दे रत्नाकरसमुद्भूतं काषायाम्बरधारिणं काषायाम्बरधारिणं आनन्दकोशसञ्चारं वन्दे सत्यम् जगद्गुरुं वन्दे प्रेमामृतपयोराशिं विश्वकल्याणकारिणं प्रेमामृतपयोराशिं विश्वकल्याणकारिणं शांति सत्य समाहारं वंदे वंदे सत्यं जगद्गुरुं वंदे శాంతి నిలయావాసం బాలభాస్కర సన్నిభం ప్రశాంతి నిలయావాసం బాలభాస్కర సన్నిభం ఆశ్రిత ఆనందమందారం వందే వందే సత్యం జగద్గురుం వందే. విశ్వవిద్యాలయ వ్యాప్తం నిగమాగమ సేవితం నిగమాగమ సేవితం సత్యం శివం చ సౌందర్యం సత్యం శివం సుందరం సత్యం శివం సుందరం సత్యం శివం సుందరం.
Can there be a better way to describe the Guru than hailing him as Satyam, Shivam, Sundaram? Such beautiful words. No wonder Bhagwan's life story has these three beautiful Sanskrit words. So yes, we will move on. As I just mentioned, we will move on to discuss about Bhagwan as the Sadguru, as the preceptor, unparalleled. And I have with me two guests from the university, one from the university and one from the Sri Sathya Sai Higher Secondary School, Mr. Venkateshwar Lu and Brother Sai Giridhar. So dear listeners, we will continue from what we left off in the previous two episodes of previous three episodes of this program, wherein we took one shloka of Bhagwan that Bhagwan mentioned in a Guru Purnima discourse, and through that shloka Swami elaborated on what are the characteristics of the Sadguru. So that is what we will do in this last leg of Thursday Life from the studios of Radio Sai.
Tune into Sai.
Spend the day with Sai.
From 6 a.m. to 9:30 p.m. on Radio Sai Thursday Live.
Radio Sai Thursday Live.
So welcome to Outside, Inside, Deep Inside, and today we discuss the preceptor unparalleled. And as I just mentioned, with me is Mr. Venkateshwar Lu from the Sri Sathya Sai Higher Secondary School and Brother Sai Giridhar from the Sri Sathya Sai Institute of Higher Learning. Thank you so much for being here, Sir and Brother Giridhar.
It's a privilege.
Pleasure, Vishu.
So shall we move on from where we left off last time?
Yeah, absolutely.
We were discussing that beautiful shloka, Brahmanandam Paramasukadam Kevalam Jnanamurtim Dvandatitam Gaganasadrisham Tattamashadi Laksham. Even though we have spent three sessions discussing this, I don't think we will ever be done.
I think an entire lifetime will not do.
Oh, yes.
Discussing this shloka and our beloved Sadguru.
Absolutely.
But then, it was very interesting. You started off with those three words, Satyam, Shivam, Sundaram.
Yes, Kirita.
Because I suddenly remember this beautiful introduction Swami gave to himself through a poem. And it's very apt to the very nature of Bhagwan, because he declared who he is through that poem. And Swami, you know, sings the poem thus, like this. Sarvarupadharam Shantam Sarvanamadharam Shivam Satchitananda Rupamadvaitam Satyam Shivam Sundaram. Swami says, Sarva Rupadharam Shantam. He has assumed all the forms in the entire creation, yet he is unperturbed, Shantam. Sarva Nama Dharam Shivam. All the names in the entire creation are his, and hence everything is auspicious. Satchitananda Rupam Advaitam. He says, my true form or name is Satchitananda, and it is Advaitam, it is non-dual, that is none other than I. And that in expression you find me as Satyam, Shivam and Sundaram.
Wow. Amazing. In fact, that reminds me of what Bhagwan has mentioned as the definition of Guru. He says, Gunatita Rupavarchita. Here you have one line which is saying that Swami is all the forms. So he is all the forms and he is beyond the form. And again, he is all the attributes and he is beyond the attributes. He is all the names and he is beyond the names.
Name and form.
And ultimately, he is that only one principle, that ekam.
In fact, Mandukya Upanishad, puts a lot of effort in trying to explain this idea of what really divinity is, because it is inexplicable, it is beyond the comprehension of mind. So it is next to impossible to put it in words, because words follow the mind. But then Mandukya Upanishad puts a lot of effort trying to describe the supreme truth, or that one without a second, which is none other than our Bhagavan. So it uses exactly these three words.
Mm-hmm.
Shantam, Shivam, Advaitam.
Wow.
In fact, in the seventh shloka, if I'm not mistaken, it's the shortest Upanishad among all the Upanishads. It's just a 12-verse Upanishad. And the seventh verse is kind of a fulcrum. If I'm not mistaken, this is the seventh verse, where it clearly says that, you know, nantam prajnam, na bahish prajnam, no bhayata prajnam, na prajnana ghanam. Basically, it negates every possibility of comprehension, every possibility of expression of gunas, like how you said. And finally, it says, if at all you want to describe that absolute sat in terms of words, there are three words that you can potentially use. That is Shantam, Shivam, Advaitam.
Wow.
And Swami uses these three words in such beautiful way, giving us clarity about how Shantam, Shivam, Advaitam really, he can be, he can never be understood. Swami always says it's impossible to understand divinity. Brahma with Brahma eva bhavati. You have to
become that.
Become, be that. You realize yourself as God, then you know what it is. It's otherwise impossible. But then it gives us a direction to dwell into, to introspect into, by giving this beautiful idea that Sarva Rupadharam Shantam. All the forms are mine. Yet I am absolutely peaceful.
Yes.
Absolute tranquility, equanimity. Sarva Nama Dharam Shivam. All names are mine. So don't abuse anybody. Don't criticize or look at anybody in any other way. Because all that you see around is only God, only God, only God. That is a beautiful idea which Swami gives. And in fact, this particular idea, I remember Swami kind of reinforced in my mind and heart in the year 2007,
mm-hmm.
when Swami had selected few of us to go to Chennai along with Bhagwan for the Atirudra Mahayajna.
Yes.
It happened all so suddenly. It was the sports meet season and we were practicing as usual in the sports field. And Swami would come from Mandir to the sports field and see our practices. But that day, Swami was in Mandir and suddenly there was somebody who came running and said, Swami is calling you. So I looked around the ground to see whom is he referring to. And then he said, no, it is you. So then I ran and went into the interview room. Swami was there. And straightforward he asked this question, are you coming with me to Chennai?
Oh my God.
I said, Swami, that's a wonderful chance. Why not? Please accept this humble servant of yours. And then Swami's next question was equally surprising. The first question was this. Then he said, do you know why I am taking you? Because you are all speakers. You are all Swami's speakers. You know, mm-hmm. Again indicating that he is the one who is going to speak. Yes. And we are just the speakers, literally, the mouthpieces. And Swami said, you are all going to speak in Chennai. That is why I am taking all of you. Okay, now tell me your topic.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he's just called us. The next thing he says is we are going with him to Chennai. And then he reveals that we are going to give speech. And the very next second, the question is, okay, on what topic are you going to speak?
How many shocks can you absorb in 2 seconds?
So it was, you know, each one was telling whatever was coming from within. When it came to my turn, Swami said, you tell me what will you speak on? And I had absolutely no idea. And what came to my mind, I just blurted out literally. I said, Swami, there is only one God.
Okay.
And then Swami felt that is not a proper title, so he decided to give a title. And he said, Ekam Sat Vipraha Bahudha Vadanti. And he asked me to repeat, El Chappu, he said. So I repeated after Bhagavan, I said, Swami, Ekam Sat Vipraha Bahudha Vadanti. He said, no, not like that. Ekam Sat Vipraha Bahudha Vadanti. You have to lay stress on Ekam Sat. Vipraha Bahudha Vadanti means there is only one.
The rest is just...
No, Vipraha Bahudha Vadanti means different masters, different scholars...
Call it in different ways.
Interpret it in different ways or speak about it in different ways.
The rest part of the sentence is something secondary.
Yeah, it's kind of a subtitle.
Yeah.
But yes. the main title or Swami was very keen, you know, and every time he will pull us up, to, you know, speak to us, give us a chance to interact with him in the context of the Chennai trip, he'll always ask the topic, and whenever he's asked me the topic, again and again he would stress, Ekam Sat Vipraha Bahudha Vadanti. So that became a habit because I had to keep repeating that, Ekam Sat, Ekam Sat. And one day I decided, in fact, I don't think I decided, it was Swami only who prompted that I should ask him something regarding this topic.
Yeah.
Because what are we to speak on this when that Ekam and that Sat is right in front of us?
And that what to speak in front of that Ekam?
In the presence.
Presence, physical presence.
Yeah, and to imagine that you are speaking is even more foolish.
Absolutely.
So I just wanted to ask Swami, and whatever Swami says, I wanted to share it with the devotees. It is the most precious thing, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So went up there once in Bhajan Hall, Swami called all five of us, and Swami encouraged us to ask questions. So I just got up and said, Swami, when there is only one, why do we see so many? Why do we see multiplicity? Means I see myself as separate, I see all of you as separate from me. So why, Swami, when there is only one, why do we see many? You know what Swami said? Swami simply looked outside the Bhajan Hall door and Swami said, Chudra, idanta 0000, lokamanta 000. He pointed to the entire world and he said, everything is but 0000. How many of zeros you want, you put, do they have any value, Swami asked? They have no value. Say you put 6 zeros or 5 zeros, does it make any sense? No. Kani dan mundara okati pedite, that is if you put one in front of the zeros, then those zeros gain value. 6 zeros by themselves don't make any sense. But moment you put one in front of them, it becomes a million. Then it's very valuable, isn't it? So in the same way, the entire life, entire creation is just 0000000. And that one which has to be put in front is God. So God should always lead the way, either it is your life or it is your perspective with respect to the creation. Always keep God first, the world next, and myself last.
Yes.
And in this context, it so happened, as the speech was developing, by Bhagwan's grace, there was a beautiful story which came up. and which was narrated there at Chennai. The story goes like this. The setting is of a desert. You can say maybe the Thar desert in Rajasthan or something like that. And there was a ailing father who was very old. He was in his, you know, last moments. He called his two sons and his daughter close to him and told them that he had written a will and given it to their family lawyer. Once he leaves the mortal coil, they should kind of contact him and, you know, get to know what he has left for them. So soon, you know, he passed away, and eventually after all the ceremonies, these three children, they approached the lawyer to, you know, as per their father's instruction, to find out what is left for them. So they go up to this lawyer and, you know, ask him to read out the will. And the lawyer says, your father has left 50% of the property to the eldest son, 1/5 of the property to the daughter, and 1/4 of the property to the middle son. So this was announced, and there was great chaos and confusion in the family. And so much chaos and confusion that the entire village had almost gathered there. So in the meantime, a wise man was coming with his camel. He had one camel. And he was coming with his camel towards this village. He saw the commotion, he found out what is the reason for this commotion. And when he inquired, he came to know that this is actually a family dispute where there are two brothers and a sister, and they are not able to resolve the will, written in the will. So he inquired as to what exactly is the property of this old man which needs to be divided. So they said that this old man, all that he had were 19 camels.
Okay.
Now 19 had to be divided by 2, which is impossible. You know, 19 camels by 2, 19 camels by 5, 19 camels by 4 was impossible to do, and they were fighting and wondering, how do we do this?
Yes.
So this wise man said, if you are willing to take my advice, I will give you a solution to this problem. So immediately everybody said, yes, yes, you seem to be a wise person, so please help us with this. He says, I have one camel with me. You add my camel up to your total, and then you do the division as per your father's will. So they added that one camel, it became 20.
Yes.
So the half of 20, that is 10 camels, were given to the eldest son.
Okay.
1/4 of 20, that is 5 camels, were given to the middle son. And 1/5 of 20, that is 4 camels, were given to the daughter. 10 plus 5 plus 4, 19, and the wise man took back his camel.
Amazing.
So,
wow.
This was a wonderful story, and it was narrated in context of Ekam Sat Vipraha Bodhavadanti. I will not explain the concept right away, because Swami did that in Sundaram.
Mm-hmm.
So let's see how it went ahead.
Mm-hmm.
So that evening, there was a lot of discussion post-dinner, with Swami on this particular story and topic and all that. And one of the elderly devotees seated there, they said, Swami, this story was fantastic. The camel story was mind-boggling. So Swami, you know, in his own inimitable style, he said, oh really, it was so wonderful, is it? What did you understand, Swami asked. So immediately everybody, you know, sat up straight and started wondering what really is the message of the story. Story is interesting, all right, but what is the message? So the elderly gentleman told Swami, Swami, it was actually impossible to divide, Swami, if that one camel would not have been added. It was impossible to divide it, you know, as per the will. And that was the beauty of the story. He said, kadu kadu. No, that is not the message. Swami said, it is that one which lent value and meaning to the situation.
Okay.
If that one was not added to 19, utter you cannot
chaos.
Divide by 2 or 5 or 4. And it leads to utter chaos and confusion. In fact, our life and the entire creation is like that. If the one which is divinity is not added to the equation of life, what happens is you only see your life as absolute chaos and confusion. And when you add that one, suddenly everything becomes simple. And the one remains untouched. That is the beauty of divinity.
Yeah. That is so beautiful. The one remains, it is part of it, yet not part of it.
Absolutely.
Amazing. And I think that is one way of understanding that ekam in this Brahmanandam Shlokam. You have, you know, so many more attributes. Ekam, nityam, vimalam, achalam, sarvadi, sakshibhutam, bhavatitam, tegunaraitam. And if you go on elaborating on each of these, what you mentioned is so powerful in a sense that everything, I mean, that is the substratum of everything that we see. As Brahman Swami says, Brahmam Satya Jagat Mithya. Mm-hmm. Everything is based on that. It's like that.
In fact, Swami clarifies this ekam in one more shloka, which Swami himself has explained, where he says, ekam eva advitiyam brahma.
Yes.
You know, this is a very famous phrase. But the real meaning that it gives is, the sage or the seer who has envisioned this truth has expressed this in such a way so that there is no sense of ambiguity at all. You know, he says ekam, that is only one. He doesn't stop that. Ekam eva, there is only one. Means when you say one, there is a possibility of two.
Yes.
Right? One, two, three, four in terms of a sequence or a series. But he says, when I say ekam, I mean only one. It is not a series. There is no second.
Correct.
So to elaborate that, he says ekam eva advitiyam. There is no second.
No second.
And that one is verily Brahman or Paramatma or Atman.
Yes.
So that's why ekam eva advitiyam Brahma. This is the explanation which Swami gives. Without doubt, know that there is only one without a second.
Wow. In fact, that is the essence of all the Upanishads, right? If
Absolutely.
You read all the Upanishads everywhere, you will find, be it Mundaka Upanishad, Mandukya Upanishad.
No, the goal of all Upanishads is this
is the thing. Yes. And they say this is the cream of the Vedas. The cream of the Vedas is the Vedanta.
In fact, the reason why it is called Vedanta is the Vedas lead you,
yes.
you know, in the direction of spiritual absolution or self-realization.
Yes.
And where the Vedas end,
yes.
their Vedanta yes. stops. That is, what is at the end of the Vedas
yes.
Is Vedanta.
It's like Swami says, the end of wisdom is freedom. The end of the Veda is the Vedanta.
Yeah, in fact, Swami has told in one discourse that Vedas are all also not absolute truth.
Yes.
Vedanta is absolute truth. It means it yes. speaks about the absolute.
Yes. Amazing. In fact, what amazes me is, you know, last time we discussed Jnanamurtim, Bhagwan as Jnanamurtim, such beautiful, I mean, such esoteric concepts actually. You know, I can't imagine that, you know, we in this, with our such limited understanding of all this spiritual topics are even able to discuss all this. It is only because of Bhagwan, because, you know, he has just made it so simple for us. Through a camel story and through things like that. You know, he has brought all these such profound concepts. He has just given it to us in such an easy form. Like, for example, as you mentioned that the verse that you mentioned, Shantam, Shivam, Advaitam,
yeah.
the whole concept, that whole Upanishad, Swami has encapsulated it in that shloka.
Really, it is the essence of the entire Upanishad.
That shloka contains everything. And if you go along in this shloka, you know, after ekam you have nityam. He is the eternal one. I mean, that is the only one which is eternal. And when you think about Bhagwan as the eternal being, you can think of so many instances, because we have seen Bhagwan, how he always knows the past, he knows the present, and we have seen him, how he has always seen the future and told us what we have to do.
Beyond time.
Beyond time. Kalaya namaha, kalatitaya namaha.
There is a beautiful incident comes to my mind.
Sure, sir.
It was that old Mandir times, way back 1950s,
mm-hmm.
when Swami used to take the devotees every day to the banks of Chitravati. And they used to have wonderful session there. On the way, there was living an old lady in a small hut. And whenever Swami used to go to the river along with devotees, she used to make some offering to Swami. Apart from that, she was serving Swami in her own humble way. And this continued for very long, and one fine day Swami wanted to bless her. So Swami stopped in front of her hut, spoke to her very lovingly, recognized the wonderful service which she was rendering, and then Swami asked her what she wants. She thought for a while and made very amusing wish. She said, "Swami, I lost my husband many years back. In fact, much before Swami took the human form." And she said, "I will be very happy if you can have his photograph." Without a pass of a second, Swami immediately waved his hand and brought out that particular photograph of her husband.
Wow.
And gave it to her.
Amazing.
She was so happy and taken aback, because by then Swami has not even taken avatar.
Yes.
And he's beyond time.
Yes.
And this happened when Swami was very, very young.
Yes. Wow.
We generally feel that Swami's avataric mission started after he declared himself as a guru or the master. But I feel that right from the time he has come, or even before, he's been doing the same work. There is another very beautiful incident of a devotee from Assam by name Mr. Gogai. He, along with a good number of young people, were taken by a minister from England. This happened much before our freedom, that is before 1947. He has taken a group of young people to England. He wanted them to get trained in various industries so that once they come back to India, they will be able to establish their own industries. This Gogai was very hardworking, very intelligent, but was not very well to do. He, along with his friends, went there. As he was not very rich, he was residing in an attic, and he used to prepare his own food because he was a vegetarian. And as the time passed, it was the time of World War. And every day, this German planes will come somewhere in the night and bombard. And as a result, there will be loss of life, loss of property, and many buildings have collapsed. In order to warn the people, much before this plane arrived, there used to be a siren, which was an indication that in few seconds or few minutes time, there is going to be the attack by these airplanes from Germans. So the people were expected to go to bunkers and hide themselves. After 1 hour or so, after these planes left, once again there used to be a siren, and then people can get back to their homes. So this Mr. Gogai, he was preparing very hard in order to do well in his studies. And every day he will listen to this siren. And as he will listen to the siren, he will rush to the bunker. And he felt that nothing is happening. It is just a false siren. So when he felt so, one day he decided that he is not going to respond to that. He was in his attic. As soon as he heard the siren, he switched off the lights, thinking that nobody else will recognize him. He covered himself with a blanket and he was lying down, pretending as if he is not existing there. And suddenly he heard that there was a police officer coming up off the stairs and knocking at his door, shouting at him to top of his voice, saying that, "I know you are there inside, come out." He has commanded. And this Mr. Gogai had no choice but to follow him. So he went and rushed to the bunker. He was the last one to get into the bunker.
and this police officer was standing outside. After some time, there was a big sound and a big bomb was dropped. And after a certain period of time, the siren was given. So when people came out, he found that the building in which he was staying, that particular building got collapsed. And there was nothing left of that. He looked for this police officer who was responsible to save his life. And he did not find him. So he felt that maybe that person also collapsed along with the building. That was his impression. And with over a period of time, he forgot about this particular incident. He finished his studies, came to India, he had his own business. And he has grown old. Almost after 32 years after that particular incident, once he happened to be in Bombay. And that was the time when Swami was in Bombay. So he heard about Sai Baba. He wanted to go and see him. But by the time he came, there was a public meeting and he was a bit late. So he was sitting somewhere in the edge, quite far from the stage where Swami was supposed to give a discourse. The discourse has not yet begun, but lots of people have gathered. More than 50,000 people have gathered there to have Swami's darshan and listen to him. As soon as he went and found place for himself to sit, there was a Sevadal volunteer coming and calling out his name, saying that Swami wants you to come and sit in front. He was amazed, thinking that first time I am coming to this particular place, how does Sai Baba know about me? But he followed the Sevadal and he was made to sit right in front. Within seconds, Swami came out to give darshan, and Swami came and stood right in front of him and said, come and settle in Prashanti Nilayam.
Wow.
He was shocked. And then he said, for that reason, I have saved your life.
Amazing.
Another shock. And he said, how is it that he is making such a big claim that he has saved my life? I am seeing him for the first time. Then Swami reminded him, do you remember that air raid warden?
Air raid warden.
He said, yes, I remember very well. It was the World War time. I was hiding myself in the attic and this warden came and shouted at me, and I came down and hid myself in the bunker, and within few minutes there was a bomb and the whole building collapsed, and I'm sure even the warden has passed away in that. He said, no, I was that air raid warden.
Wow.
Saved your life.
What an extraordinary grace.
Absolutely. When this particular incident took place, Swami was just 14 years.
Physical. And in India.
The Satisai avatar was,
yes,
14 years.
That's how
physical form.
He has come to the rescue of the people, and he's been doing that, and he's much beyond
amazing,
time.
Amazing. Nityam. In fact, when you mentioned about this person telling Swami that I'm seeing you for the first time, how is it that you have saved my life? I'm just reminded of one very beautiful incident which Ramana sir just shared with me a couple of days ago. He's recorded it in his book also. This is sometime in the 70s. The Dasara celebrations are going on and people are coming from all over the place. And Swami one day calls him. Actually, that morning Swami distributes clothes and to all the ashram inmates, as well as to all the sevadals, dhotis and saris to men and women. After the distribution, Swami calls Raman Rao sir, and Swami says, Chudu, just now a couple, they entered the ashram, now they are in the shed, and that person is about 70 years of age, and his wife is about 65 years of age. This person, he's got a tuft of hair like these Brahmins have, and he's having a sacred thread, and now he has just kept his trunk. Now he's opening his trunk, and now he's took out two towels. Now he's changed his dress. One towel he has kept on his shoulder. The other towel he's is on his body. Now he's
removing the bag, and from the bag now he's removing a chembu. Swami is giving a running commentary of what he's doing in the shed. And then suddenly Swami stops and Swami says, Ramanrao sir, you go and get this person. Get this couple. So Ramanrao sir just is about to start. Swami says, no, you take along with you a Kannada speaking boy. I told, why Swami? I can manage. I mean, I can identify him and get it. Swami says, no. Once you go there, he will ask you, why is Swami calling me? How does Swami know that I am here? I am coming here for the first time. All that he will say. And Ramana sir said, Swami, I will tell him that you are God, that you are omnipresent, you know everything. Swami said, all that is fine. After that also, he will ask you, okay, if all that is fine, but if I come with you, who will look after my luggage? This is what he is going to ask you. So Ramanrao sir is saying, he is laughing to himself. I mean, how could anyone do like that? When Swami calls, will anyone think whether my luggage is there, my box is there? I mean, he feels it is too exotic. But in any case, but Swami insists, which is nothing doing, it's my command to take one boy and go. So ultimately he takes one Kannada speaking boy and he goes there, and it's not difficult for him to identify that couple. So he starts speaking to them and he says, you know what, Swami is calling you. Mandir, Swami is waiting for you in Mandir. And this old man says, what? Swami is waiting for you in Mandir. I am coming here for the first time. How does Swami know me? And who are you? This cannot be. I think you are mistaken. Then Ramana says, goes, you know, he says, Swami is omnipresent and all that. So that doesn't work. Then he asks his boy to explain. So this boy explains, okay, all that he hears. And then he says, okay, if all that you're telling is true, if I have to come with you, but what about my box and my bag? And that is when Ramanrao sir says, yeah, this boy is there. This boy will look after your luggage.
Oh, okay.
So he will stand guard. You please go to Mandir, come with me, I will take you to Swami. And when he comes to Swami, and first thing Ramanrao sir tells Swami, Swami, whatever you have told, exact thing happened. Swami said, I know, that is the reason why I was asking to that boy. And Swami said, you have to be admonished for your garrulousness, for you are not listening to me. And then Swami, of course, and you know, Ramanrao said, like, you know, how you ask forgiveness, you beat your cheeks and all that. So all that he did, does. And then Swami blesses this couple. Swami grants them padmaskar. Swami gives them a new clothes. Swami tells, see, today is Vijayadashami. So both of you go shower and change this new clothes and then you come. And don't worry about your money. Tomorrow bank will open. Whatever extra money you have, you keep it in the bank. It will be very safe. You can stay very comfortably in Prashanti. I will look after everything. All that Swami tells them. They come for the first time. And they are from a village in Karnataka. Somewhere, I forget the name, Chikmagalur or something, some village name. Now, when he mentioned that, you know, when we say that we have come for the first time, there is no one who has come to Bhagwan for the first time.
Yeah, in fact, Swami says
he is Nityam, he is eternal.
He says, you may think that you are meeting me for the first time, but I know you through and through.
Yes.
All along.
Yes.
You know, he is Nityam.
Yes. Just like there is one instance where someone tells Swami, I've been waiting here for 3 days, and Swami says, 3 days, I've been waiting for 3 janmas. When will you change?
Sometime 3,000 years.
3,000 years. When will you come? So, I mean, such amazing instances whenever you think about Bhagwan as the eternal principle. And the next thing in this shloka, Vimalam. Vimalam, one meaning is like he's the blemishless one, right? The one who is very pure.
Absolutely.
Faultless. And Niranjanam. That is Niranjanam also means the same, right?
Yes.
One who's and it's so easy to picturize Swami as Vimalam, isn't it? As someone who's so, I mean, especially when you see Bhagwan in that sparkling white robe on Christmas Day, and, you know, you can only think of purity. You can only think of that purity. That is, when he wears orange, you think of sacrifice.
But that day it's like purity
incarnate.
It feels like that. It's so amazing. In fact, talking about purity, there is this beautiful incident which was narrated by Mr. Gopal Indreshwar, who is the grandson of the Rajmata of Navanagar. He says this happened when he was in the 12th class. And so one evening Swami had come to the gymnasium, which is, of course, today it is converted to the labs, right?
The one next to the higher secondary
school. Next to the higher secondary school. Which was a gymnasium for very long. At that time, there was the only gymnasium. Now we, of course, have the indoor stadium and the full-fledged gymnasium there. So Bhagwan had come there, and there were some boys, you know, who were toiling away at the horizontal bars, which were there all installed for the first time. And it was a very difficult thing, you know. All of them were sort of figuring out how to do and all that. So, of course, you make mistakes. So some boys had souvenir of blisters on their fingers, and, you know, all that was going on. So it was one of these evenings then when Bhagwan came into the gymnasium, and no one expected Bhagwan there. And Swami was sort of very keen about what boys were doing, and he started directing boys, you know, how to do this, you know, how to use this particular dumbbell, or how to use this horizontal bars, and etc., etc. And when Bhagwan was doing that, there was one boy by name Satya Prasad. Now, a smile just escaped his lips. Because this guy was kind of a Tarzan. He was a very... He had a very sculpted body.
Okay.
Huh. Whatever you call it, 4-pack, 6-pack, whatever. You know? And he felt what was going in his mind was, I mean, here is Swami, such a frail, delicate figure. And he's telling us about building muscles. I mean, he felt very odd that Bhagwan can give a sermon on building muscles. And so it just didn't click, you know, it just felt it was not on. And that's why when the smile escaped his lips, that did not escape Bhagwan's eyes though.
Yeah, everything is under his notice.
Absolutely. So Swami immediately saw that, and Swami said, "You think I do not know anything about exercise?" And everybody kept quiet. And then Swami started talking about the Malla Kushti days, you know, the ancient times, how they used to have this wrestling matches and all that. And then Swami said, especially Swami went to Satya and Swami said, the Satya Prasad and said, strength does not come from muscles, Swami said. That was almost sort of a revelation. And then Swami looked at him and said, how strong are you? Well, he had no answer, but what happened next was absolutely out of the world, because there was this gymnastic bench there, and imagine this, there is this gymnastic bench, a very rustic setting, and on one side is Bhagwan, on the other side is this boy, and they are locked in a battle, they are locked in an arm wrestling match.
My God.
Swami invited. Because Swami asked, how strong are you? And next, there was no answer. Swami said, okay, come on. Let's have an arm wrestling match. And so both Bhagwan, so here is Satyanarayan Raju and Satya Prasad locked in a grip over there. And Swami, you know, initially Satya Prasad, given that he's such a very well-built guy, he didn't really want to quote-unquote hurt Swami. So he was not really exerting pressure, you know. The chance itself to hold Bhagwan in that scenario, in that way, is itself so such a privilege. So, you know, it's a great excuse to hold Bhagwan's hand. Why unnecessarily?
Absolutely.
So try and put his hand down. So, you know, he was sort of taking it very delicate care of Bhagwan's hand. And then suddenly he saw that the other boy saw that Satya's face was getting distorted. His jaw muscles were tightened. His every nerve was getting so tightened. And then they saw that he was actually, you know, he was trying to save himself because there was so much pressure. And then, when he looked at Bhagwan, there was that benign smile on Bhagwan's face. Absolutely no pressure. Absolutely no pressure. And The boy saw that Satya was, he's like all the veins are pumping out, his muscles are becoming taut, and here is Bhagwan who is completely relaxed. And then, he was so helpless, Satya Prasad, he didn't know what to do. And then, you know, he looked helplessly at all the boys who were around. And so all the other boys now joined in. So it was not just Satya Prasad, the entire fraternity of boys who were there, they all joined. So many hands came. Still, they could not move an inch Bhagwan's hand. And bang, every hand went down. And you know what the thought was when they all sat defeated. The thought that came to their mind is, yeah, Swami, you are God. You know, nobody can fight you. Because a moment ago, Swami looked so frail and he was so delicate, and they thought they will not hurt Swami. And here, suddenly, they are totally vanquished. And so, Bhagwan then looked at them and Swami asked, Kaisa laga? How was it? So the boy said, Swami, you are God, Swami. Of course, I mean, if you want, you can put down the whole world. Swami said, no, I have come to put up the whole world. I have not come to put anyone down. And then Bhagwan added, and this is so important. Swami said, but this was my physical strength. This was not my divine strength. But they could not absorb that. They said, Swami, you are God, Swami. And whatever we experienced is, it is because of that. I mean, both are intertwined. I mean, you just cannot tell that this is not something to do with divinity and all that. And then came the revelation. Swami said, the fact is, I am absolutely pure. From the day I have come down to the planet till today, I have not done one single wrong deed.
Top to bottom.
Top to bottom. I remember Bhagwan, whenever he used to speak to us in interview in school days, he used to call us for interviews, class interviews, he used to always say this, top to toe, I am selfless. Top to toe, I am pure. This is what Swami said. From the day I have come down to the planet till today, I have not done one single wrong deed. It is the power of purity. Swami said, I have not yet used my divinity. Not yet use my divinity. This is not my divine strength. This is my pure physical strength, which comes from him being that Vimalam. Well, if you take this shloka, I mean, you can go on and on with so many facets of divine, and I think to me it appears, it's just like that shloka, you know, Purna Madam, Purna Midam, you take out the full from the full, what remains is full. It's like that. To me it seems like each word of the shloka has the entire shloka in it.
Correct.
And one beautiful insight that occurs when you say Swami Sakshi Bhutam.
Generally we understand Sakshi Bhutam is a witness.
Hmm.
But Swami gave a beautiful explanation to that, saying that he is not just a witness, he is the one who is the source of all energy.
Hmm.
He is the one who is working through each and every living creature. And in the same time, he is a witness.
Hmm.
He gives the example of Sun God.
Hmm.
Sun is the source of energy to the entire creation. Apart from being the source of energy, the sun is also the witness.
Yes.
So in the same manner, Swami, who is the source of all energy, all strength, which is responsible for all of us to function in physical plane or any other, is also a witness. Not only gives energy, he just watches what we are doing. That freedom he gives.
Amazing.
And that's the meaning which I understand about Sarvadi Sakshi Bhuta.
It is so powerful when you think about it, no? I mean, it is actually very difficult to fathom this whole concept of someone who is a witness. Someone who is a witness, at the same time someone who sustains and energizes. And the sun makes it so clear.
Yes,
I don't know if there's any other example which can Explain
it's because it's the sun's energy that sustains the whole world.
Yet the sun is simply
a witness to whatever happens in the world.
Yeah, and God is like that. I mean, we are able to speak, sing, talk, whatever, only because of His energy. And at the same time, He's just
a witness.
Just a witness. And that's what Swami used to tell, no? He used to give that example of that postman and all that. He's really just a deliverer of what, and we experience whatever we are doing. He's just there.
He gives that freedom.
Just gives that freedom. Amazing. Amazing. Bhavatitam triguna rahitam. And we have seen this aspect of Bhagwan also so much, right? Where we have seen Bhagwan
unaffected. Unaffected by any situation.
Unaffected by any situation.
I remember way back in 1972, the summer course was on. There were more than 1,000 students from all over the country for attending that particular summer course, and one particular day morning, it so happened that Swami's Divine Mother, Mother Ishwaramba, calling out to Swami, passed away. The moment Swami heard her calling, he came down from the room itself. He said, I am coming. And she passed away. He came down, seeing the body. Swami was so unmoved, as if nothing has happened. The people around were crying, the devotees were crying, but Swami was unmoved. Swami had that kind of a love of 1,000 mothers, seeing his own mother. And after some time, he called few elders and Sevadal people and instructed them that they should take the body to Puttaparthi, as Swami was at that point of time was in Vrindavan conducting the summer course. And the information was not passed on to anyone, as the summer course was on and there were whole day programs right from morning till evening. It was only in the evening, when it was Bhagwan's turn to give discourse, Swami disclosed the news of his mother passing away. People were shocked, because Swami was so involved whole day in various activities, and people could not make out that such big calamity has taken place, such big shock for Swami's physical body. But in spite of that, he was as active as any other day.
Amazing. So
we find that Swami remained unmoved by any of the situations.
In fact, what occurs to me is, I've seen Bhagwan, you know, he would shower love on a particular individual, say, or a particular student, you know. He would shower not for day or two, but for month, but for years and years, and, you know, he would give so much, and then one day you would expect that, you know, maybe Swami is expecting something from this boy. Maybe this is what this boy will do. And perhaps that boy will just leave for whatever reason. And from a physical standpoint, to me it seems like, how can he do that? You know, Swami has given him so much. And there have been occasions when, you know, Bhagwan's also told that, you know what, probably, maybe you should stay back. Maybe you should do this for me. But for whatever reason, you know, that is also divine plan, that the boy has to leave.
In fact, I remember a very small incident which took place. Swami was showering, as you mentioned, lot of grace on one particular boy. And that particular boy had a chance to walk into Swami's room whenever he wanted. And one day Swami took him along with him to Whitefield in his own car, knowing very well that after reaching Whitefield, he is going to go off. And exactly the same thing happened. All through, Swami showered so much grace on him. And the moment he reached Whitefield, he quit and he never came back again.
That's so amazing. I mean, how can you give so much and
don't expect anything. Absolutely, you don't expect anything in return.
Amazing. But I think when we reflect on all this, I mean, it is there is something that we, all of us, students, devotees, really need to do, so that, you know, we can benefit. I mean, after having known him, after having experiences and continuing to experience him, there is something that perhaps we really need to bring a change in our perspective, the way we not only
experience, but how we translate that experience into our lives. Because there was one very telling incident, again Indreshwar sir had narrated. This is once they were with Bhagwan in Kodaikanal, and Bhagwan had given so much of his time to the boys, and he said, "Swami, we are so happy. And this must have been our Purvajana Samskara, Swami. This is definitely the merits of our previous lives. Not only our merits, but also the merits of our ancestors, that we are finally in your divine presence." Swami heard all that, and Swami, in fact, some of the elders who were there, they said, "Swami, we have done nothing in this life to deserve you, Swami." And what Swami said? He said, "Do you know those sages who are sitting in the Himalayas? Some of them have been meditating for over 1,000 years. And when I appear to them, it is only for a brief spell. Sometimes less than even 2 minutes. Now tell me, what have you or your family or your lineage done to get, forget 2 minutes, you get easily so much of my time. Day after day, tell me what you have done to receive all this." Of course, everyone was shocked. I mean, who has done anything to deserve what Bhagwan has given? And then Bhagwan said, "It is your good luck that you were born at the time the avatar decided to come down. It is further your goodness definitely that attracted you towards my godliness." But Swami said, "But that in itself is just an infinitesimally small contribution. It is purely my grace alone that each one of you, each of you souls, you have come to me. Not one of you in front of me deserve even 1 second of being with me." Swami said, "You don't deserve even 1 second of being with me. Not a single one of you. What I am conferring upon you is a billion times more than what you deserve." Swami said. And after Bhagwan told this, Bhagwan's expression now changed to that of a bit of sorrow and concern. And then Swami said, "But not one of you is making even 1 billionth the best of it. I mean, I am conferring on you what? A billion times what you deserve, but you are not making even a 1 billionth effort to make best of what I am trying to give you." Swami said. And I think,
it is so true. It is so true.
And
what is required is, as Swami says, 3 P's.
Yeah.
Purity, patience and perseverance. If you really wish to benefit from Swami as a Sadguru, this is the prerequisite. In fact, Swami beautifully explained through a Chinnakatha this particular concept. It seems a young disciple approached a guru who happened to be a realized master, seeking a mantra from him, saying that by chanting that particular mantra, he will get realization.
Mm-hmm.
The master heard him very patiently, his request, and then said, "To get that, I should feel that you are fit to receive that. And in order to make me feel that you are fit to receive that, you must stay with me and serve me." The disciple was so eager that he was ready to do any bidding of the guru. So he stayed with him, served him day in and day out. Not days, not weeks, not months, for years. Many years passed, almost after 12 years after his stay. One day the guru felt that Now the time has come when he can bless his disciple with the mantra. So he called his disciple very lovingly and said, see, tomorrow is going to be the very auspicious day.
Mm-hmm.
Let us go together to the banks of the holy river Ganges. There I will bless you with the mantra which you wanted when you came to me. The disciple was so excited that he could not sleep the whole night. He was waiting for that wonderful moment, that auspicious moment when his guru is going to bless him. So he accompanies his guru, goes to the banks of the holy river Ganges, and there the guru instructs him that he should go for a bath, finish some ritualistic activities, and then come back to him, and then he will confer upon him the mantra. Altogether, to do these things, he required a substantial time of few hours. He goes, obeying his guru, to a place which was a bit far from the place where they were waiting at that point of time. The moment disciple moves out, suddenly the guru realizes that his end has come. And he feels by the time the disciple come back, he may not be alive. So he looks around to find out if anybody is around who can help him out in this situation. The disciple has served him with so much of obedience, so much of love and care, and the time has come when he should bless him. And before the disciple comes back completing the rituals which he has instructed to him, he will not be there anymore. When he was looking around, suddenly he finds that there was a lady who was walking on the banks of the river. She happened to be an acrobat who performs various tricks on the roadside, attract people and make her living. So he calls her and says, this is my predicament and will you please help me? And she volunteers to help this great master, and as she was uneducated, he says, I am going to write a particular mantra on the sands. Please make sure that it is intact by the time my disciple comes back. Saying so, he writes that particular mantra on the sands and moves away, saying that if I stay here, my disciple will feel very sad of my passing away. So let me move out. Let him have the joy of getting the mantra. I am sure this will liberate him. Saying so, the guru moves out. And this acrobat lady, even though she was uneducated, but she was very shrewd. She takes a palm leaf and writes down that mantra on the palm leaf with lot of difficulty and folds it and puts it on her ear and waits for the disciple to come. After some hours, the disciple comes with lot of happiness and expectation and looks around and finds that his guru is missing. He makes inquiry from the people around, and finally this lady comes forward saying that, are you looking for your guru? And he says, yes. And he says, I am very sorry to tell you that he is no more here. He gets shock of his life. He was waiting for this moment for so many years, and this is the time when he was expecting that he will be blessed with the mantra and the guru is no more. He starts crying loudly, and then this lady consoles him saying that, don't worry, your guru was very kind. Before he left, he gave a mantra to you, and the mantra is safe with me. The moment he heard that the guru has given the mantra, he requests that lady that he should be given. And then the lady says, if the mantra is safe with me, but how many years did you serve your guru? And he says that I have served my guru for 12 long years. Please give me that particular mantra. He was very eager to receive it. And then the shrewd lady says, you served your guru for 12 years to get the mantra. Now the mantra is with me. you serve the same period of time, then in turn I will give you the mantra.
Oh my God.
You can imagine anybody in that particular situation, but this disciple was having such firm conviction that he must get it. He was unmoved by the situation and the demand which this lady made. And he says, I am so very thankful to you that you promise me that you will bless me with the mantra after 12 years. Let me serve you. Let me do your bidding. Whatever you want me to do, I am ready to do. And then onwards, he followed that lady and did whatever she asked him to do. The guru was very kind. He had given him good food and good nourishment and good advice all through. But this lady happened to be very shrewd. And every now and then she will scold him, find fault with him for every small act which he used to perform. But without minding the treatment which he was receiving from this lady, he continued serving her with all patience, hoping that one particular day she will give him that particular mantra. The time passed, many years passed, he kept serving that particular lady and he was trying to do all that which he can do to please her. This lady was very shrewd. Once she understood that the person who is serving her is very obedient, she started exploiting him. There were days when she refused to give food. It was one such day, this disciple was very hungry, was going round into a particular village to find some food to eat, as he has not eaten food for 3 days. When he went to one particular house, the person says, why are you coming here to ask food? The king of this particular kingdom, he is feeding all the people for last several days. Go there and have your fill. So he rushes to that particular place. It so happened that the kingdom where he was there at that point of time in the village, the king had a very strange question. He called all the wise people of the kingdom and put this question, saying that I would like to know who is the most noblest of the people of our kingdom, who is the most devoted person of our kingdom. And the people who came to that particular assembly was giving answers in their own way, and the king was not satisfied. In fact, most of them, they said that it will be very difficult to find out who is such a person whom we are wanting. And then the Purohit of the king comes and says, I have a solution. I have a method by which we can find out who is the best person, devoted person, pure person. And he suggests him that you call for performing the feeding of the people. You tell people that you are going to perform this act of serving people for some days, and let people come from various walks of life. You provide them food. I will tie a bell on top of the temple. The moment you find that the kind of person whom you are looking for enters and partakes the food served by you, the bell will ring. And that will be an indication that he is the disciple or he is the person you are looking for.
Automatically the bell will ring.
It will ring.
Okay.
So king agrees and he performs this feeding for number of days. Nothing happens. There were sadhus, there were saints, there were rich people, poor people, all kinds of people came and had their fill, but the bell never rang. So the king was disappointed. And then they stopped that particular ritual. The next day, when they stopped this particular ritual, the next day, suddenly they find that the bell is ringing on its own. And the king sent his people to find out who is there. And they came to know that the feeding has already stopped. There was nobody there to have food. It is just that whatever food was left was thrown somewhere. And somebody was eating that leftover food which was thrown. The people, king's people, went and caught hold of him and they said that we invite you to the king.
And this disciple was very frightened that these people have come to take him to the king. And they say that, no, we are taking him because he is going to honor you. So he was brought to the king. And then king makes inquiry about his whereabouts. And this disciple narrates the whole story right from the time he approached the guru, praying for a mantra which will liberate him. The minister was very keenly listening to the whole story. And all of them, they felt pity, the situation which he was going through. And then immediately, as soon as he completed his narration, the minister suggests to the king, because he came out with a wonderful plan so that he can liberate this young boy from the clutches of that acrobat lady. So he says, O king, please invite her and ask her to give performance in your presence. So the disciple was asked to go and get her master, and she was asked to perform in the presence of the people in the palace. And as she was performing on one particular feat, standing on one particular pole, the minister advises king to throw the diamond earrings. So the king shows those diamond earrings and says that you can have these rings. Saying so, he tosses those rings towards that particular lady who was balancing on a particular pole. But before she could take those earrings and put it on her ears, the palm leaf in which the particular mantra was written was there on the ear. So immediately she removes that particular palm leaf earring, which she made an earring out of it, and throws it down and catches hold of the diamond earrings which king has tossed towards her. The moment the leaf fell on the floor, the disciple immediately went and caught hold of it, and he opened it and read that particular mantra. The moment he read that particular mantra, the next moment he got the realization.
Oh.
Saying so, Swami said, all the penance, all the sadhana which he did by serving his guru and serving this lady purified him. His patience, his purity gave him liberation in an instance.
Yeah, it was a process. The whole thing was a process.
So in this particular manner, we find that in order to earn the grace of the guru, we have been blessed that we have come to Bhagwan's fold. He has shown us the way. We have chosen a particular path to follow his teachings. Whichever path we have chosen, let us keep moving forward in that particular path without losing patience. And I am sure, just by following the path shown by him, we will be liberated in this birth.
Yeah, I think that whole thing of obedience, whole thing of steadfastness, that's so important.
And deep yearning.
Deep yearning, yes, yes. Amazing. I think we can go on, but I think time is running out and we really need to put a stop somewhere. And I hope and pray that we'll meet more often and spend time in such beautiful satsang.
Thank you very much for this wonderful opportunity.
Well, I should thank you, Bhagwan, for making this happen. So, dear listeners, that was the fourth part of this discussion that we've been having on Bhagwan as the Sadguru. And we are stopping only because we have to stop somewhere. We are never done with it. But I invite you to spend some time reading Bhagwan's literature, where you will find such amazing insights that Bhagwan has given on all of these things that we are sharing today. Whatever we are sharing is what we have read from the Sai literature. And that is the only thing that will add meaning to our lives, as Giridhar said. That is the one which will add all the zeros in our life, meaningful, useful, and fruitful. So, as we celebrate Guru Purnima, Let us spend time dwelling on what the Master means to us. The best way, they say, to value the Master is to master His values. So we will have to spend time in seeing how we can add value to our lives by valuing the words of the Master. Before I conclude, I just want to share also with you that this coming Sunday, we have live programs on Telugu stream from morning 6:30 till night 10. We have live programs and there are more than 150 participants who have come from all over the state of Andhra Pradesh to participate in this live third anniversary celebrations of Telugu stream, because Telugu stream started on Guru Purnima Day in 2011, and this year we complete 3 years. We've got a studio in Tirupati, we've got a studio in Vishakhapatnam, we've got a studio in Hyderabad, and there is so much of active participation of so many volunteers, and this is one occasion to celebrate that coming together of all the volunteers and do something collectively in Prashant Nilayam for Bhagwan in trying to disseminate His message and share His love. So stay tuned to Telugu stream on the Sunday. That is the day after Guru Purnima, 13th. And of course, be with us all the time. Keep sharing with us your feedback. As always, you can write to listener@radiosai.org. And even as I sign off now, you will continue to listen to a drama. This was staged by the Balivikas children from the USA on the 4th of July 2005. The name of the drama is The Only Element. So that's what you will listen. Thank you so much for being with us, and it's time to conclude. I'm Team Radio Sai's Bishu. As I sign off and take leave, my loving Sairam and sweet goodbye from Prashant Nilayam.